So welcome to the next episode of the Can Marketing Save the Planet podcast. And today, Gemma and I are thrilled to be joined by Sandy Skies, EVP of Purpose and Impact Global Lead at Porto Novelli. Sandy, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So when we were writing the book, we came across some research that you had done, and it is actually featured in the book. But before we get into that and dive into the detail of what that research entails and the work that you do, could you just kick off with a little bit of an introduction to yourself?
Sure. I lead the Purpose and Impact practice at Porto Novelli. Porto Novelli is a global communications consultancy, and I came back, actually. I left in 2007, I left Porto Novelli. At the time, I was running one of our large global accounts, working in technology and consumer products, and feeling quite disillusioned by the entire marketing communications profession, and left to pursue sustainability. And when I say sustainability, what I mean is environmental, social, and growth, those three dimensions, how you manage and leverage and balance the drivers across environmental, social, and growth revenue aspects of a business. And that's what I've been doing since 2007. I came back to Porto Novelli because what I saw as a practitioner, as a technical practitioner, as someone advising companies around their environmental and social commitments, is that we weren't moving fast enough because communications, the discipline of strategic communications wasn't woven into organization or culture change at scale. So I came back to Porto Novelli, and we've built a team of people all over the globe. We've got folks in across the world who are both either technical practitioners in environmental and diversity, equity, and inclusion issues, and can consult on what, let's call it, the apparatus or the organizational dimension of that. Mm-hmm. And we have strategic communicators, persuaders, et cetera, who can take what we know needs to happen and weave that communications in from the very, very beginning. And what the goal, and it's actually the reason why I wrote my book, Purposeful Brands, was the more we can agree on a certain set of language and a certain set of practices, the faster we can move at transforming business and changing culture, which is what I'm here to do.
And we can agree more. We absolutely believe there is a communications crisis that sits behind, you know, climate and sustainability and everything that's happening. So when we came across your webinar with you talking about the action intention gap, that really, really sparked our interest. And you also talk about the rise of the conscious consumer and the necessary role that marketing plays in that. Now, there's a whole lot of stuff in there. So can we just start with this action intention gap and the findings of your research?
Absolutely. So back in 2007, when I attended the very first Sustainable Brands Conference, which was a gathering, it was a unique gathering of sustainability professionals, marketers, brand leads, you know, product brand managers, and communicators, which was the first time I saw, that I was introduced to the concept of sustainability for sure, but also saw in the room people in my profession. And, you know, it's like I found my space. And what that told me is that the communications dimension is what's missing in terms of driving change. Back then, we were studying what was called the green consumer. And there's been a raft of research since 2007, 2008, almost every year, measuring the population, sort of gen pop, and trying to determine what percentage of those, and back then we were calling people dark greens, light greens. I think we had tans and we had dark browns. And those were the personas of consumers and what they were willing to purchase. It was all about product purchase intent and would they buy green products, and go back and remember the days, the early days of seventh generation or some early Clorox Greenworks, and just those early products that had sustainability and green attributes, but the trade-off in terms of performance was tough and the price was really high. So this, what are people willing to buy? I've been tracking since 2007, 2008. In the last year or two, and we can see a substantive shift. For the last two decades, about 20 to 25% of the consumer population remains stubbornly dark, what we call dark browns. The I don't believe this global warming, climate change, whatever you want to call it. I don't believe in it. I don't think it's real. And I'm certainly not going to either change my behavior or buy products that you tell me are good for the planet, because it's just it's not interesting and it's not a motivator for me. In the last summer, we did some research, and that's the research you're referring yep. to. And for the first time, that percentage was 6%, not double digits. And still, at the time, it gave me chills. It was like, oh my gosh, we have, in the span of about 12 to 24 months, seen a massive shift. And if you just look for research around public opinion about climate change, there has been a massive shift in terms of people are concerned about the climate. They're concerned about weather, extreme weather events. They know that the world has changed. We live it. And it doesn't matter what part of the world you live in, you're seeing these extreme weather events.
Yeah.
And the correlation has been made that business and business practices and the products I buy and the behaviors I have are part of that. And so what we've seen is the intention action gap close, because for years it was, sure, I'll buy a green product, but then we didn't actually see the product numbers change in sales reports or, you know, on the shelf tracking. People would say, I intend to, but then actually didn't. And now we're starting to see that shift.
That is a significant shift. That's a real wow moment. That must have been, right. like you said, gave you chills. And it's interesting, Sandy, because when the work Gemma and I do and the people that we're talking to and the organizations that we're, you know, because we're about education and awareness and driving this into marketing as much as we can. And yet there is always that tension between, yeah, but, you know, the research says that people say they want to do this, but do they actually do it? And your research from the piece that we were reading about is that there is this intention and desire, and they are actually doing it.
Right. What I wanted to know in the research we fielded in the summer was not just are you ready to buy a product, but are you ready to change some behavior? And that was the what we wanted to explore. So we took four of these behaviors. One is, you know, becoming more plant-based. The other is reusing and refilling and repairing. Another behavior was looking out for climate-friendly products. And we were just asking people on a spectrum. So you can imagine on the, let's look at plant-based. That's a great example.
Yep.
I'm ready to add more plants to my diet. We saw that, yeah, I'm ready to do that. I'm ready to reduce meat in my diet, yes. And then all the way up to, I'm ready to go vegan. That actually was about 6% of folks. So there's still that group of people who are willing to go all the way to the far edge. And then in that same plant-based, we saw about 8% saying, I'm not willing to make any changes. So we kept seeing the correlation of concern for the environment and willingness to behave. There is this small single digit percent that aren't going to do anything. But what we saw in the middle, 51% overall in each of these said, I'm willing to adopt some changes to my behaviors, some daily activities that are good for the planet. I'm ready for that. And that's the first time I've seen that kind of softening in the consumer market, where we now have people saying, you know what, it's more than just buying a product, because that used to be the signal, or that used to be the thing I could do. Well, I'll just buy this product because it's made better, so I'll buy that. Now they're saying, no, I'll change my behavior also.
Yeah, I think, and there's been a mindset shift, hasn't there? Because once you hit a mindset shift, then behaviors kind of start to follow generally, don't they?
Yes.
Do you think things like the rise of B Corp and social impact companies and those organizations that, you know, are born out of doing good, you know, like the Ben and Jerry's mm-hmm. of the world, do you think they're having some kind of influence on changing mindsets? Where do you think this mindset change is coming from, apart from the fact that people are seeing more adverse weather events and climate change messaging and news everywhere?
I think there's two pressure points or two waves of pressure. The first is the change in the generational change that's coming, right?
Yeah.
The Gen Z, Alpha below them, and even the cohort below that. Our children and our grandchildren have been raised with environmental concerns as part of their educational system. So those of us who are older and didn't have that in our school system have come to it late in life or come to it later, the Gen X's and boomers and et cetera of the world. But our children were taught environmental science in their classrooms and were taught to recycle as young as the very earliest childhood school. So yep. these kids have all grown up with, what do you mean you're polluting? Like nobody does that. So you have this cohort of folks who are buying from you, investing in you, and working for you. And I don't think any of us should dismiss the investing, which I think is fascinating. With the rise of fintech, you can micro invest in a lot of companies. You're going to start getting their proxy statements. You're going to start getting communications because you're a shareholder now.
Yeah.
And so a lot of young people are investing, working for, and buying from companies. And they expect the company to be as responsible as they expect of themselves. So I think that's the one pressure. And every CEO I speak with is aware of that because those are major stakeholder groups, right? Important stakeholder groups. I would say the second and maybe part of that is the watch of the financial markets attention paid to what I call purposeful organizations. Mm-hmm. For me, sustainability, that's that balance between environmental, social, and growth inputs and outputs. That's sustainability has to ladder up to a purpose, which is the greater good that a company will create in the world as a business strategy, as its business. When companies are clear about that, it makes it easier to make decisions about all of the environmental and social impacts you're going to weigh in on and participate in and help change. And then that gives you clear, authentic signaling to your stakeholders. So this rise of the purposeful brand or the purpose-led company came from the financial markets. And it's because for in the early days of the sustainability, this last sustainability movement that I've been in, there was always the myth that if a company used capital to drive to improve environmental outputs and environmental impacts or social, the trade-off was profit. The trade-off was growth.
Yeah.
And because we now have almost two decades of attention paid to companies that did that, the data started showing that those companies were outperforming the market.
Yeah.
Why? Because they were taking more care of their resources. They were managing the waste that they were producing in the world and selling it as a recyclable rather than paying to have it hauled away. Just all risk diminishment, you know, risk management, good sustainability practices are good business practices.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's not just, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's efficiencies, isn't it, Sandy?
Absolutely. Operational efficiencies, yes. And social connection.
Mm.
So better employee engagement and loyalty, right? And and I remember being on it was a stakeholder call with an analyst from a financial firm. And I was talking to the person who ran their impact investing fund. And they were asking me questions about a client I represented. And I started asking them questions. And I said, why do you track diversity, equity, inclusion, and social capital issues? Like, why do you track them? And he said, well, because when companies have steady workforce, their smart innovators don't leave because they're displeased with the company or don't feel attached to it. So there's less churn around employees. So we see those are all good assets for, I mean, if your number one asset are your people,
yeah,
and they love working there and they are productive and producing and feeling engaged and enthused and they don't leave, then that from a financial perspective is diminishes risk.
Yeah.
So
I mean, there's some interesting statistics in the Gallup poll around the disconnection of employees mm-hmm. with being aligned with the purpose and values of their organization. And it's an enormous number. It's, you know, there's a lot of yeah. people that aren't engaged with their organizations, and therefore productivity is impacted. And that productivity, I think the latest Gallup poll put it at something like $400 to $500 billion per year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a staggering number.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So clearly people want to make better choices. And I loved what you said at the beginning of the podcast, where you said environmental social growth.
Yes.
I think that should absolutely be the steps mm-hmm. That we all need to embrace and take on. So what do you think marketers and brands need to do better? Because we need to take this shift mm-hmm. faster, don't we?
We do. Forward. We have to move faster. And that's the sense of urgency that I have, is we don't have a lot of time to meet some of the ambitious goals that companies have set. We've got to change a lot in the next, I mean, the 2030 goals are 6 years away from us, the 2050 goals, you know, a couple of, you know, a decade more than that,
yeah.
if my math is right. So here's what I think marketers can do. I always look at purpose, sustainability in two dimensions. There's organizational change, and then there's culture change at scale. We've spent the last almost two decades working on organizational change. And that is companies that have gone in and done their baselining, set the parameters and boundaries of their life cycle assessments, understand from heat map analysis where their greatest emissions emitting processes are, all of it. And their companies are, to a varying degrees, marching toward fixing the things they can fix.
Yeah.
What most companies have come to realize is, in order to fix the hardest things, they need to change their customers' behaviors. And the example that I always use is Tide laundry detergent. When they did a life cycle assessment of the laundry detergent, they learned that the hot water used to clean the clothes had the highest environmental impact mm-hmm. of the product use. If you look at the full life cycle, right? So they went back and said, oh gosh, well, hey, scientists in our lab, in our R&D facility, can you please formulate a version of Tide that works as well in cold water? Because actually we need it to be in cold water, not hot. And scientists can go do that. And they did that. And now they're left with the sticky problem of culture change, behavior mm-hmm. change.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a system change, right? So first of all, and I know this because I was on a panel with the head of fabric care at P&G. You know, Todd was talking about washing machines, default setting, normal setting is hot or very hot.
Yeah.
So you've got to influence the household appliance market. And then you have people, right? But you can begin partnering with clothes, because now we're starting to see apparel makers saying, hey, don't wash your clothes so often. Or when you do, wash them in cold water because they'll last longer. So it's all, and then I layer in, and our research says people are ready to make small behavior changes. So if you tell them, you know what, if you wash your clothes in cold water, you're going to save money because you're not going to pay for the energy to heat your water. Your clothes are going to last longer. And from an environmental perspective, you're doing your part. That's a win-win-win. And I think what we need the marketing profession to do is begin embedding all those messages as a matter of course in the way we sell product benefits. And I know those conversations you're talking about, right? It's, look, we only have six bullet points on pack, and we can't put a climate message there. And that's the trick is let the marketing message be one that appeals to the consumer.
Yeah. 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 It's social marketing, isn't it? It's how do you, you know, it's usually traditionally associated with health and safety, give up smoking, you know, mm-hmm. eat healthier, less sugar. We need to right. start bringing in social marketing to change a lot of the behaviors and culture in societies in the countries right. we live in. That's and that's ongoing messaging, continuously nudging and things like that, isn't it? Taking it forward.
Yeah.
It's right. And think about all of us who've done marketing for alcohol or spirits, right? There are laws that say you have to do responsible marketing, at least here in the United States. I'm not sure if that's, I'm certain it's true there.
Yep.
And so we've all seen those brand guideline documents that tell you how you have to do spirit marketing, which includes responsible consumption messaging. I'd like to, and now we've also seen the beginnings of sort of diversity, equity, inclusion guidelines. Make sure you have diverse people in shot. Yep. And it's all about the production of marketing materials, commercials, ads, social content, et cetera. Well, what if we had this, and we absolutely need it from a social equity, creating a cohesive culture that we want. We as marketers, we have a powerful medium for culture change.
Yeah.
And let's be intentional about it, right? So what if instead of having the two people chatting on camera, we've got, you know, a diverse mix of people, but why are they always holding a disposable throwaway coffee cup and having a conversation? That is like this ubiquitous tick that is in every scene. Can we just give them a refillable coffee cup?
Yeah.
Like those, that's what I'm talking about as marketers. Yeah. If we use the power of the ubiquitousness of our marketing in a different way, we can speed, because then it's just subliminal, showing the world a different thing.
And particularly, Sandy, as you've said, you know, we've seen this shift in the consumer, that they are ready mm-hmm. to take these shifts. And they're witnessing, as we all are, the changes, mm-hmm. and everybody's becoming more conscious about these shifts and changes and wanting to do things. And that starts to kind of, our values are shifting mm. to want to do more. We want to get involved with, we want to understand how we refill this, and we're concerned about packaging. We want to understand the provenance and various things of the pocket. So we are becoming more conscious. And I guess from a marketing perspective, it's about meeting our audiences where they are at. And so when mm-hmm. you've got those six bullet points on the pack and you're saying, oh, but we don't want to use a climate message, it's almost reframing that to say, well, what are the values now that we really need to meet of the consumer? Because that's shifting. It's not just all about that. We now need to meet them and make sure that some of those points are hitting those very human values that they're very concerned about.
Michelle, I think that's absolutely right. I think that's an astute observation. Is how do we as marketers test for that? Because when we're doing A/B testing or all of the things we do as marketers, we have three or four attributes or benefits or things we want to test for, but we're not testing for the benefit of this makes me feel good because if I do this, I'm in some small way helping the planet.
Exactly.
And it's not going to say that word for word.
No.
But I mean, we're clever. Let's get clever about this, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Plus, we have more access to information than we've mm-hmm. ever had. You know, you talked about this, the generational change that are coming through. I mean, I have a 10-year-old daughter. She is so much more worldly than I ever was at 10 mm-hmm. years old, you know? And she really does understand and have access to more information. So I think, you know, as you said, it's about appealing to people's values. It's about making small changes. It's about making those cultural shifts and making them normal and part of everyday life. So Sandy, what do you think are some of the things that are holding brands back from really, really going into this with both feet?
Fundamentally, I think we have business models that have to shift. Let's take the CPG sector It's massive. Consumer packaged goods. That's what CPG stands for. Mm-hmm. Most of those are single-use products. Use once, throw them away.
Yeah.
The packaging exists out there forever as plastic packaging. Companies in this sector understand that. Retailers who put those products on shelf understand that. I've been in plenty of meetings where retailers and manufacturers are having a serious discussion. If we wanted to do refillables, how do we actually do that in store? If we want, I mean, they're experimenting with, here, buy this product in a refillable container and subscribe to its refill. Like, the, you already start seeing hints of these things coming. So if you've got a business model that requires people to buy your thing, throw it away, and keep buying a new one, even something as simple as a shampoo bottle. Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy shampoo and I'm going to keep every month, I'm buying, or whatever, how often people use shampoo. At any rate, and then you realize, oh gosh, that's not going to work anymore because the packaging doesn't work anymore. The frequency of use doesn't work anymore. Apparel companies are another huge. We saw the rise of the fast fashion. We're watching it shift before our very eyes.
Yeah.
More and more people want to buy either secondhand clothes. They want to rent the clothes, or they're just not buying as many. Minimal, you know, the minimal movement. All of it. You're watching these social cultural experiments happening, which threaten existing business models whose revenue is based on a particular set of behaviors that is changing.
Yeah.
So I think that's the hardest part, is for brands to really understand that. Read the tea leaves. Yeah. A lot is shifting.
It is. And I guess that we're talking here about re-engineering your whole business model, aren't we? You know,
right.
that isn't an easy thing to do. If for decades you've been doing things one way, you know, this is significant transformation. And
here's another great example. We're watching the shift, the electrification of transportation, mm-hmm. right? From internal combustion engines to electric vehicles. For automotive makers, they've had a massive revenue stream in servicing cars because you got to take them in for their oil change and, you know, the 60,000 mile checkup and all those things. Electric cars don't need any of that.
Yeah.
So all of the automotive makers, while simultaneously coming to market with new EVs, have to figure out how to watch that revenue disappear and think of a different source of revenue. Because otherwise your company will implode. And these are not easy things. I have deep, deep respect for the executives who are grappling with the massive system change we're talking about.
Yeah.
But then there's a massive growing cost of inaction, isn't it? For every decade that we do not act, that cost just continues to grow as supply chains are, you know, disrupted by massive weather events and by the fact that the customers, people are shifting and businesses are trying to catch up, essentially, as opposed to driving those changes, which they've been so used to doing. So that cost of inaction is huge.
It is. That is absolutely right, I think. And I don't know, Gemma, that many marketers see the risk of that. Supply chain disruption, your enterprise risk management executives do, and they're grappling with that now. But as marketers, I'm not sure all marketers and brand leads are looking at that. I did a talk with a global CPG company back last year on Earth Day, and I remember saying to them, they were mostly communications and brand strategists, and I said, you know, maybe instead of thinking about vanilla SKU being the next innovation you come out with, you know, or some flavor, how about exploring some climate solution or packaging, something that brings your emissions down as the next innovation instead of just another flavor?
Yeah, exactly. And that's really challenging. It's exciting though, isn't it? It's an opportunity for marketers as well. I remember when we spoke to Oliver Bielby Wright on the podcast from Consumers International, and he was saying, you know, a similar scenario that most marketers aren't aware of the life cycle assessments. You know, they don't understand the supply chain. They don't understand the stuff going in, and therefore, of course, those risks associated with these weather events and the challenges and the costs of inaction, as you rightly say, aren't necessarily filtering through to the marketers. But in our viewpoint, this is the landscape now marketers are operating in. And it is now incumbent on us all to be kind of really aware of, you know, let's go in eyes wide open, thinking about the opportunities here. So talking about then some of the, we've talked about some of the, you know, what's holding brands back. What do you think are some of the biggest challenges marketers need to address in using their skills and creativity and influence as a force for good?
I think inertia is a powerful force. And marketers, the greatest challenge facing them is once you're awake and you see this, get yourself educated and then push. Push in meetings, push in, in strategy sessions. Hold space for the consumer who wants to do more. Be their advocate in the meetings and make sure that at least call the question.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't find its way on PAC, but be the voice in the room that asks for it. So I would say fight the inertia in the system.
Yeah. I love that. Be the voice of the consumer that wants to do more. I mean, that is really championing. That is, you know, we say as marketers, you are the custodian of customer. Well, you know, actually really don't sit on your hands here. Start connecting with the things that really matter. Oh gosh, that is such a great call out there. We'll be definitely sharing that.
That'll be a headline, but exactly the same. You know, we could literally quote you there in terms of say once you see this, what's happening, and see the reality, you can't unsee it, and then it fills you with a fire that just makes you want to learn and understand more. And then once you do that, the ideas and the ability to challenge, and challenge in a way that it's, you know, that senior executives listen, because you're building a business case and you're presenting them with not just the problems, but potential solutions. Mm-hmm. Marketers have a huge opportunity to do that, don't they?
Absolutely. Yes. We're culture changers. That's what we are.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have been, like I say, since 2007, you know, and in your career, living and breathing this. What, from a changing behaviors perspective, what kind of insights, tips, you know, experience would you share with fellow marketers who are grappling with this, Sandy?
I would say educate yourself. Don't be afraid of the technical jargon of it. Marketers are, in a way, they're cultural anthropologists on behalf of the business. The role that a marketer can play is unique than a communicator, right? So in communications, you're telling the story to a whole range of stakeholders. Marketers, it's all about telling the story to the customer to drive revenue. And if you can couple revenue growth with planetary or societal improvement, that's it. That's the sweet spot right there.
Yeah.
So there's so many books and information sources. You can get smart on this. Yeah. Learn the basics. And then don't be frightened by the technical side of it. In the same way that every marketer learns all the technicalities and the nutritional benefits of the food there. Like, we learn the dimensions of the products we're trying to go to market with because we have to in order to tell the story. This is just another body of information that you've got to be able to synthesize, internalize, and then communicate back out.
Absolutely.
And that education and awareness actually drives the confidence and the courage to then, as you say, push the conversation, be that advocate for the concerned consumer. So absolutely, that is, I mean, from our perspective, there are 10.6 million professional marketers on the planet. That's a lot of education and an awareness that you know, can you imagine?
That's what I love about what you're doing. Imagine if we can.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we can get everybody rowing in the same direction, we'll move faster.
We absolutely will. Oh, Sandy, gosh, we could talk to you for
hours.
Hours and hours. I mean, hours and hours.
Like-minded.
I hope we get to chat again. But we like to wrap up the podcast with three quick fire questions, the same questions that we ask to all of our guests. So our question number one for you, Sandy, is, can marketing save the planet? What's your view?
Absolutely. Marketing can save the planet. In fact, I think we're at the place now where it may be one of the only things that can, because we're ready for culture change at scale. And that's what marketing is brilliant at.
Fantastic.
And Sandy, what do you hope business looks like in 10 years' time?
I hope we have experimented with the business models that prevent us from making change. And we've created all new businesses and innovations that drive societal cohesion and a regenerative planet.
Beautiful. And I know you've given us so much advice and many pointers and insights, but if you could just give one piece of advice to marketers, I think I know what you're going to say, but you know, you may surprise me. What would you say?
In addition to being courageous and being the voice of the consumer in the room, be your own environmentalist. Experiment in your own life. It's interesting the kind of compassion you have for organizational change and individual change when you yourself are trying all these behaviors. You become your focus group of one and try all of these environmental and social behaviors.
Amazing. Love that. Sandy, where can our listeners find out more about the amazing work you do?
But best place is my website, sandyskies.com. You can find information there about my book, Purposeful Brands, speaking, all of those things about me. Or you can check out porternovelli.com. And there's a lot of information about the work we do there.
Fantastic. Well, that just leads us to say an absolutely huge thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. That was such an illuminating conversation.
My pleasure.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. And we seriously hope to get you back on the podcast again.
I would love to. It's wonderful, and I will come back anytime.
Thank you for tuning in to the Can Marketing Save the Planet podcast. We hope that you're enjoying these conversations just as much as we are. And if you are enjoying them, then please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast channel and indeed to share the podcast with your colleagues, your friends, your family, because the more people we can get engaged in these conversations, the better. You'll find the podcast on all the usual podcast platforms, and you'll also find it on the Marketing Society podcast and the Global Player. For more information about the podcast and indeed the work we do, please visit www.canmarketingsavetheplanet.com. There you will find information about our latest books. You'll find information about our online sustainable marketing training hub and the training and advisory services that we offer. And you'll also find our Learning Zone, which is an absolute resource hub filled with all things sustainable marketing. So we look forward to hearing more from you. And we look forward to catching up soon.